going to go ahead and have our speaker chair, Roberta, come up and introduce our keynote speaker for the evening.
Hi, everybody. So great to be here tonight. Wow, what an honor and privilege it is to have been. I feel like I got the luckiest chair that is out there, and I definitely wouldn't have said that even a year ago. I got to choose all the speakers, and there's at least 10 people I wanted, and I had to condense it down. And the first person I thought of was my dear friend Kailani, and so I'm so grateful that she said yes. She said she'd give it thought. She's in school, and so grateful she could come. And I've known her since she first came into the rooms, and more than 2.5 years later, the growth in her has just been such a gift in my life. And I think that you're going to see when you hear her tonight, you'll see her recovery is just amazing, and I know you'll get a lot from her. So without further ado, because we're running low on time, and I want her to be the speaker, not me, here's Kailani.
I'm Kailani, and I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm going to pull this closer. And would all who care to please join me in the serenity prayer? Let's start with a prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will be done. I am so unqualified to be up here tonight. I'm so humbled to be here with my fellow compulsive eaters. And I guess what does make me absolutely qualified to be up here tonight is that I am very ill. I'm a sick person. And I actually said that to my sponsor. I was like, you hear all of my stuff every morning. You must think it's absolutely crazy that I'm speaking at the CHOW convention. She's like, no, Kailani, you're sick. You're the perfect person to speak at the convention. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I love our fellowship, but the only requirement to be a speaker is that you're, like, you know, mentally ill, physically ill, and trying to get better. So I qualify, and that's fabulous. That being said, this program has saved my life. It's a privilege to be in here with each of you, because everyone in here, I'm assuming, is a compulsive eater, except maybe a couple. If you're a compulsive eater like me, you have an amazing story because you have a life and death story. And that's my story, is an addict, life or death. And this program has saved my life. My accident date is T2809. That's 2 years and 136 days. I've lost 44 pounds in CEA HOW and 67 pounds from my top weight. I'm 31 years old. I came into CHOW when I was 28. I had spent many years in our sister fellowship and in another 12-step room, and I'd struggled there. I knew my life was unmanageable, but I couldn't admit that I was a compulsive eater. That didn't sound right. It sounded very negative, you know. And in the other room, I was a compulsive overeater, and I was like, I'm so much more than that. I don't want to be labeled like that, you know. I just was in such resistance, and I didn't want what anyone had, and I felt like everyone was kind of big and negative, and I was like, I was vain and young, and I was like, I don't really want what you have, and you're telling me to do these things, but my life's unmanageable, and I've been to treatment centers, and I've cut off all my hair, and I've done all sorts of things. You know, I've read every book. I've lived at macrobiotic centers and raw food centers, and, you know, like, everything but surgery. I feel like I've pretty much done. And I thought about things that, you know, severe things. My disease took me to the point where I prayed to God that I would be homeless so that I would not be able to eat anything. External circumstances to force me not to eat. So I'm just going to spend a teeny bit on the backstory because there's so much more to say on the other end. But, you know, I was a compulsive child, and I didn't realize how compulsive I was until I really got into my inventory, and thank God for outside help helping as well. Outside help is great, meaning therapy, but not until I was sober with food, really. You know, like, outside help is awesome, but if I'm still in the food, it just gets everything confusing, and I'm still looking for other people to be my higher power. But when I was little, yeah, very compulsive. I was a hand washer, a counter, you know, refused to go to the bathroom, just very obsessive. But no one knew. It was my own private world, so it was just how I lived. It wasn't until I really got into recovery that I was like, wow, that's a really lonely place to live. So it goes to show me that I was highly obsessive, compulsive before the food addiction took place. When I was 15, I began dancing full-time. I thought I looked a little chubbier than the rest of the girls in the leotard. Dance became an obsession for me. And very innocently, I asked my ballet teacher what to do. She told me to cut my lunch in half, very innocently, and I said, great. And I began, and I began to lose some weight. I liked the way it felt, and I just kept going. And I, as a, you know, 17-year-old girl, I ended up, you know, over 5'7", and I was 89 pounds. I lost, like, 40 pounds when I was 17, to the point where they stopped casting me because they didn't want me on stage. You know, that was, like, a bad image for the dance company. But that goes to show to me that the disease had progressed because I didn't care. You know, in the beginning, it was about the dance, and then I was like, they're just jealous. You know, it's weird places that our head go. And I would wake up in the middle of the night being sure that I was dying from malnutrition. I'd go down and chug some liquid. And then the next day, you know, back on the races. And so my story is a little dramatic in that I then gained 60 pounds in 3 months. And then I proceeded to gain 100 pounds total from my, like, 89 pounds. And being a vain young performer, highly self-obsessed and focused on my self-image, this was horrifying to me. And I was in New York at NYU, and I stopped leaving my apartment. I chopped off all my hair. I refused to see people. And that was the first time that I consciously asked for help. I called my parents, and I said, this is bad. I need some help. You know, in the anorexic days, I was really, really, really skinny. I couldn't ask for help. I didn't want to ask for help because I wanted it. But the second my vanity got triggered with the being overweight, I was able to ask for help. So thank God for that, right? Thank God for the vanity. Came for the vanity, stayed for the sanity. And anyway, so I've been in treatment centers. I ended up living at home for a couple years in Virginia with my family. Didn't leave my house for a period of a couple years except to get food or drop myself off so no one could see me. You guys know the drill. I mean, the shame with the compulsive eating. I was a secret, you know, eater. I didn't want anyone to see me eating. I'd go out to the store, shove things in the coat, hide stuff under my bed in my closet, eat everything in the house. People would come home, Kyle's on it, you know, trying to fill everything back in. I'm a volume eater, eat till I can't move. I'll never do this again. In the bathroom, so sick. God, I'm so sorry. I'll never do this again. I'll never do this again. I'll never do this again. The second I wake up from my long sleep, there's a tiny little bit of hole space. I'm off to the races again. I have the physical allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And the thing for me being deeply in the disease of compulsive eating is when that physical allergy gets triggered, it is just like heroin or any other drug. It is like, I have to eat, you know? And I know that everyone in this room who qualifies as a compulsive eater can relate to that. And thank God for the doctor's opinion in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous for really deciphering that. So anyway, when it comes to the food, I think I've pretty much done most, probably what everyone else has done in here. I know that there's different varieties of compulsive eaters. You know, like I said, I was a binge eater, eat till I can't move type of eater. But I know that we each have, you know, different stories within that. So I'll start with this. I know I won't be able to say everything that has come to mind that I want to say tonight. Thank you, Ray, and thank you, everyone who's doing service on a larger scale. I know that retreats and conventions are very different. You know, retreats are very, like, they're about going within, and conventions are a lot of energy. It's sort of the difference between, like, going for a run and taking a nap. Both are really necessary in life, you know? You know, you got to exercise and you got to rest, and this is more like the exercise thing. So if you're a little overwhelmed, or I think it's okay to take a moment and take a breath and take some time this weekend for yourself. I just wanted to say that. So what happened for me before I came into CEA How was I had been in another 12-step room for compulsive eating, and I had an abstinence of 3 meals a day and no sugar. And my life was still consumed with food. It was still about, where was I going to go? How big was that meal? And, you know, how it was like, it was a healthy meal. It was organic, you know? And it was largely green. But it was big. And it was, where was I going to go? And my life was still obsessed around the food. And then I decided, you know, I really miss my family. Maybe I'd have a better connection with them. And if I could just start to eat like a normal person. And I've done so much spiritual work. And I've been on lots of retreats. I meditate. You know, I decided to try to eat like a normal person again. And this was in the fall of 2008. And I'm so glad I did it. Because within 3 weeks of that minor recovery that I'd had in the other program, I was suicidal again. I was quit my job. I was homebound. And I gained about 20 pounds again. Within 3 weeks, you know, it would have taken me 28 years to get to. It took me 3 weeks to, like, go back into. That shows that this is a progressive disease for me. And what happened first, before the phenomenon of craving, like in terms of the allergy of the body, what happened first, and this is what was so interesting about having a little bit of recovery, is that I noticed the obsession of the mind. And that was so profound for me. It was like I noticed that every time I went to go eat compulsively, I had this thought, you can't tell me what to do. I'd never noticed that before. Huh. There was a defiance. You can't tell me what to do. I will have my freedom. You know, housebound and suicidal and ready to die. Like, okay, you know. But I will have my freedom. And then I'd wanted to eat like normal people so I could actively engage in life, right? I was tired of being different all the time and like, what's Kailani doing now with her food, you know? I just wanted to be normal. And yet, I was going out to a meal with a friend and I'd wait till she left to get more dessert. How is that normal? You know, just waiting. And I can't be with her present because I'm just thinking, when's she going to go so I can get the other thing? And then on the way home, it wasn't working for me. So I ended up in my apartment in Hollywood, sitting there, having eaten the entire 30-day Advent calendar, and it was like, you know, like not the end of the month. And amidst other things, large piles of things. And I knew for me, you know, similar to the Big Book, that it was either, and I didn't want to die. You know, I've always had a deep, full feeling of meaning in my life. Like, there's things I'm supposed to do here. So I didn't want to die. The feeling of, like, I will not live like this. I will not go here again. So there's that option. Or I'm going to have to go into a facility because I can't. And I had a therapist tell me that once. The only solution I know for you, Kailani, is to actually, like, lock you up in my garage and come out. And I was like, great, will you do that, you know? Seriously, it was so desperate. Anything. So that was the moment, and the reason why I tell you this is that is the moment for me when I realized, that was the moment for me when I conceded to my innermost self that I had an illness. And that's when everything shifted for me. It was like, this is what I say to my sponsees, and I say it on the phone bridge. Yay, phone bridge! yeah, sisters, round of applause. I realized it's like I lost my pinky finger and it's not coming back. And it's that simple. I've been running around trying to convince myself that I have all 10 fingers and that it's going to grow back, or if I lost it, it's going to grow back, it's going to grow back, and it's gone. It's over. It's done. I lost my pinky finger. Now what am I going to do? You know? And so that's what really shifted for me. It was like, oh, I have an illness. It's call it compulsive eating. I can't control food in my life. I can tell you how much to eat. I can make a serving for you, but I can't for myself. You know, I'm too far gone. And that's what I came into these rooms of CHOW, and I don't even know how I knew this program existed, but I somehow did. And my old OA sponsor drove with me to my first meeting, and she said, you know what, Kailani, maybe this will be the best thing that ever happened to you. And she went across the street to that meeting, and which works for her, and it's a great fellowship, and I went into the CHOW meeting, and I thought, oh, my God, these people are crazy.
They weigh and measure everything that goes into their body. Oh, my God. What if I travel? What if I get married? What if I... And again, I don't want to give up my freedom.
And then I went home that day, and I was sitting in my chair in my apartment. I was like, well, Kailani, are you traveling anywhere today? No. Are you getting married? No, definitely not. I haven't had a real relationship with most anyone for many years. Can you weigh and measure your lunch? Yeah, I can today. Today I can weigh and measure my lunch. So, and I made a bunch of outreach calls. And someone told me how to make a breakfast here. And they told me how to buy a lot of the green things that we eat at every meal. And I went to a meeting the next day. And I just began. And I'll tell you, like, the first actually real weighed and measured meal that I had was dinner. And I thought, I can do this. 24 ounces of this, you know, 2 tablespoons of this. I was like, because I'm a volume eater, so I was like, I'm going to be okay. You know, like, I'm going to be okay. This is actually pretty good. It had, like, a trough, you know. Like, this is really good. So, and so I began, and I thought, I can do this for 7 days. I can do anything for 7 days. And then I was like, I can do anything for 30 days. And I've done some crazy stuff. I mean, those of us who've been in the disease, we've done crazy stuff, right? So I was like, I can do this for 7 days, 30 days. I mean, you know, as they say, we'll gladly refund your misery. And, like, but I have to say, I'd never felt at home in the 12-step rooms. I'd wanted to. I wanted to get that feeling that everyone talked about. Like, I knew I was home. And I was just never felt that, ever. I didn't get the big book. I didn't get any of it. And I felt that in CHOW. By, like, my third day, I was like, these are my people. They are crazy disciplined and structured and totally, like, controlling. Like, finally, the black and white boundaries I've been searching for. Gosh, they're going to flip me if I don't do this thing to the T. This is great. I felt safe, you know? What's that movie where Claire Danes, she's autistic and she gets in the machine that she's made? Temple Grandin. I related to that movie. I used to sit in my car when I was in my disease because I felt really safe and contained, you know? And that's how I feel in CHOW, in like a really good way. I feel contained, you know? I have a structure. I have a design for living today. What is my success in this program? Well, that sounds silly to even say. I mean, there's only one way to go, really. But for today, I mean, I do the 7 tools no matter what. I know people get so tired of hearing that, especially if you're not doing the tools. It's like really annoying to hear. Oh, I hate when people say that, you know. But if you do them, then you know what I'm talking about. I do them every day, and I do not do them to be virtuous. You know, maybe I did at the beginning, because I really had one sponsor, and I really wanted her to like me, and she just never did, and I would just, please, I will call 7 people. Just be nice to me. But, no, I loved it. She just never bought any of my Al-Anon stuff. It was amazing. People who taught me a lot in this room are the ones who said some nasty things, and they just didn't buy any of my sweet, manipulative stuff. They were just like, get over yourself, you know? You know, you're so self-addicted. And I was like, wow, they're right. I'm so self-absorbed. Thank God for step 6 and 7. But there's a reason why it's 6 and 7, because I'm not there at step 1, right, when I'm super desperate. And So, yeah, I do the 7 tools every day. Without exception, I call through people and I talk to them, I read and write. I go get my 3 meetings in a week. And again, I don't do it to be virtuous. I do it to stay alive. I do it, as a sponsor once told me, because it's a privilege. Because for whatever reason, in that moment of grace, I realize that I don't have a pinky finger, metaphorically, and that if I want to be able to use my hand, meaning my life, that I need to take the medicine, and that's what it says the medicine is, you know? So I take the medicine to the best of my ability every day. It would be like, to me, like going to the doctor because I have strep throat, and I'm like, it hurts so much, I can't talk. I feel horrible, and he gives me the amoxicillin, like, take the whole thing. You know, they always say that. Don't stop before the prescription's over. And that's like me, like, taking a cup and I'm like, I feel better. And then wondering why I have strep throat again in 3 weeks. You know, it's like, no, take the whole thing. So I do my best to take the whole thing. And I am far from perfect, but that's what I do. And again, my sponsor always tells me this too. You know, she says, Kailani, like, what we're doing here is we're practicing. So again, I do the 7 tools because that is how I practice on a daily basis conscious contact with my higher power. Because that's what this whole thing's about. God. I mean, whatever that is to you, higher power, spirit of the universe, doesn't really matter. Tree, I don't know. Fellowship, I mean, God can be a triggering word for a lot of people. So if it doesn't work for you, you know, no problem here. But to me, when I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh my God. They're basically telling me that God is like the answer to all of my problems. Wow, that's really radical. You know, that is super, super radical, I think. And so how do I practice that conscious contact? I put the food on the scale. Every time I do that, it's like I'm surrendering to something higher. Every time I read and write, I'm practicing that conscious contact. Every time I talk to another, you know, God to me is like this idea of God, as I understand God, as I don't understand God, you know, is that it can't be seen, right? Just like light. Light, I've learned, cannot be seen. I experience light because it reflects off a surface, you know? So I feel like that's my experience of God, too. I experience God through reflections off of other people. Through action. You know, there's no chapter in the big book called Into Thinking.
I wish there were, because I would be so recovered, you know. But no, I haven't found it yet. Maybe in the 6th edition we can come out with a chapter, but no, it's called Into Action. And to me, that's how I find God. So again, I think those the tools and the steps and the traditions are brilliant ways to get an addict like me, a really sick addict like me, into action. And in that into action and, like, being sort of forced to call you guys when I don't want to sometimes, you know, it's like that forces me to practice having an active, relationship with the God, with the higher power of my understanding. And that's really what it comes down to, too, is, like, a personal relationship with a higher power. So I sort of feel like my abstinence addresses the physical allergy of the body, and then the steps and the tools and everything else address that thing up here, you know, that obsession of the mind. I feel like this has come to me lately. I've heard someone else talk about this. Like, God is, like, here. Not that God's a person, I mean, but, you know, God's here, and, like, God draws this big circle around God. It's going to sound really silly, but... And then because love, turns out love isn't controlling, which means that I was doing a lot of non-loving for a long time. But if love isn't controlling and God to me is love, well, then God would allow me to pretty much do whatever I wanted and hope that I would come back home. And to me, my addiction is my gift because it's what got life so bad that bringing me back home. And it's me choosing, kind of like a rebellious teenager, to step back into the circle.
with that. It's like the circle's always been there. You know, this presence, this love, this whatever we want to call it, it's always been here. And in step one, in step two, coming to believe, and then in step three, making the decision, I'm choosing to step back in, you know? And this is where the hard work comes. Because if it were this easy, it would be great. This is where the hard work comes, and I'm in maintenance, you know, right now. I've been maintaining the same body weight now for, like, over a year and a half, which just blows my mind. I've never maintained, you know, body weight. And this is where the hard work comes, because that rush of, like, losing all the weight kind of goes away, and it just comes normal way of life, one day at a time. And now it's like, wow, I'm really sick in my head. And I have a lot of compassion for myself, why I ate for so long, and why sometimes I still want to. And why my fellow compulsive eaters who have the same illness that I have, too, because I wouldn't have been eating if there wasn't a lot of unmanageability inside of me, if there wasn't a lot of dysfunction. And I need this work, this step work, this writing, this work with my sponsor on a daily basis, as Chuck C said, to uncover, discover, and discard that stuff. Otherwise, I will use again. It is too unmanageable. And it says in the beginning of A New Pair of Glasses, one of my favorite pieces of literature that comes from AA, you know, it says, the reason why most addicts return to their drug isn't because, like, they're like, I want to. It's because that feeling of unmanageability becomes so great that it's like, I will die if I don't use. I'm going to die. And I know that feeling so well. I still get that feeling with people in my life sometimes, you know, which I go to another program for. I will die if I don't get this right now. So I've heard that the steps are supposed to be the exact, a substitute for the effect that food gives me. But the difference is food is an immediate effect and the steps are long term. So I gotta stick with it. You know, I gotta trust the people who are walking ahead of me. And so that's what happens in maintenance. And it's like, wow, you know, to feel the level of indecision that I've struggled with, to feel, we each have our own ism, right? But for me, there's been so many mental quirks that come. And maintenance takes a lot of courage, in my experience right now on a daily basis. And I'm very young in this program, you know. I'm just, you know, barely 2.5 years here. And in the big picture, that's very young. And thank God, because that gives me a lot of hope for where I'm heading, you know. But I wanted to read this, and I'm going to wrap with this, because I think I have, like, probably about five, maybe not even. But I was reading Step 8 the other day. I've been doing the kaleidoscope, you know, big book questions. And, gosh, I just thought, I'd never really caught this before. Because Step 8, we always think it's about what we've done wrong to other people, and it is. But it says, very deep, sometimes quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. As Ray said, you know, I'm 31, and I feel like I am just discovering who Kailani is. You know, my personality has been so discolored growing up in a family of dysfunction and then learning how to cope with that via an addiction. While the purpose of making restitution to others is paramount, it is equally necessary that we extricate from an examination of our personal relations every bit of information about ourselves and our fundamental difficulties that we can. Since defective relations with other human beings have nearly always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our compulsive eating. Defective relations, it says right here, with other human beings, have been the immediate cause of my woes, including my compulsive eating. What does that mean? Does it mean my relationships right now? I go back to that core relationship with my parents, growing up in an alcoholic family, you know. I grew up in defective relation. How could I have an effective mind? So for me, it's like going back, and thank God, God to me is the great psychologist, because I can't, my finite mind cannot cure that which is, you know, it cannot cure that which is sick. No field of investigation could yield more satisfying, valuable. We can go far beyond those things which were superficially wrong with us. My weight, my size, my hair, my did I say the wrong thing. To see those flaws, which were basic flaws, flaws which sometimes were responsible for the whole patterns of our lives. This is to me what maintenance is about. It's going back to the root of the root of the root and getting into the other programs that help deal with the relationship stuff if I need it, which I, as a compulsive eater, do. This is if I want long-term abstinence. This is if I want what the big book talks about, a full psychic change. I'm not just here to lose weight. I'm not here just to feel better. I'm here to have a full psychic change to become all of who I am here to be so that I can actually say, how can I help you, and really mean it and be available to do it and enjoy it. You know, I've heard so many people say, like, at first they come here because we have to, and then we come because we want to. And I want that life, and I want a life of meaning, and I believe that my higher power put me here to live a meaningful life. And, all right, I'm going to wrap up here in just a few minutes. So, today, I think I have to be really careful in that God is not some commercial God, like, I'm going to do the third step, and I am never going to have a bad thought again. I have made a decision. You know, it's mean God, you know. No, never. You know, I do my fourth step, and then, like, 2 minutes later, I'm, like, having, it's like, oh, I thought that was supposed to be the magical thing. There is no magical thing. That's what I'm getting. There is no magical thing. I'm probably going to have rotten thoughts till the day I die. You know, weird things are going to happen. I'm going to get stuck in traffic. There's no magic here. There's no magical dust that's going to make me obstinate. You know? It's like the difference is that I have a partner now to go through it with. I'm not God. You know, and I don't have to be. And it comes down to that, again, that seventh step of humility. I don't have to be. You know, I can tap into that unconditional love. And again, for so many of us, for me at least, it's like redefining my higher power. You know, if I'm not feeling totally loved and held, then I got to redefine what that is to me. So, again, as I guess as I started off this talk about life and death and the sort of drama of our disease, I just want to say that I think it's really cool today to live in conflict, because my whole life as an addict was about avoiding conflict at all costs. I was very happy with my pants unbuttoned in front of the television, in my second half gallon of you-know-what, and other things, and it was safe, and I got to live an amazing fantasy life. Like, I was going to, you guys, I have an Academy Award in that life, you know? I don't even want an Academy Award today. I mean, it's kind of weird to say that, but So, today, it's like I see conflict differently. You know, conflict, and I really am going to wrap with this. Think of every great film you've ever seen. I never saw a great movie, and I'm stealing this line from someone, I didn't come up with this. I never saw a great movie about a kid who was like, I want a Volvo. And then for 2 hours, he works really hard for that Volvo. And at the end, he gets it. And I'm weeping, you know, oh my God, he got the Volvo. No, that's not what great movies are made of. Great movies have tons of conflict. You know, you show up at the house, you're a guy with the flowers for the girl, and the girl doesn't open the door. Or, you know, like, things happen. Conflict happens. It's dirty. It's hard. It's messy. It's gross. It's scary. And this is what makes us riveted in our seats when we watch a good movie. Like, yeah, go for it. I don't want that life. I want a life of meaning. And I honestly don't think God cares if I suffer. You know? Because I'm just seeing the tiny little one word on this page, and it turns out there's a whole book. And it turns out my life even if I live to be 100, is like this much of the book. The result, the resolution to that awesome movie may not even happen in my life. I just get to be a part of it. And I want to be a full part of it. And when I'm abstinent and not using, I get to experience that. Every single time I choose to use and pick up, I am pulling myself out. And for today, I don't ever want to go back to that. So it's hard. It's exciting. It's privilege. I couldn't do it without every single one of you. And thank you so much for the privilege of getting to share my story with you tonight. Thank you.